What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
Well, the holidays have come and gone once again, but if you've forgotten to get that special someone in your life a gift, well, Mint Mobile is extending their holiday offer of half off unlimited wireless. So here's the idea. You get it now. You call it an early present for next year.
What do you have to lose?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Limited time 50% off regular price for new customers. Upfront payment required. $45 for 3 months. $90 for 6 months. Or $180 for 12-month plan. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds may slow after 50 gigabytes per month when network is busy. See terms.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And today, our guest is David Hughes, who is a fellow whitetail hunter here in the Midwest. David, how you doing?
Not too bad, Dan. Yourself?
I'm doing good, man. I do have to start off this episode with a little bit of a story that just happened before we started recording. So as the listeners of this podcast know, I host several podcasts. Most of them are outdoor hunting related. I got the Nine Finger Chronicles, the Western Rookie, the How to Hunt Deer podcast. Soon I'm going to start recording episodes for the How to Hunt Turkey podcast. And David decided he wanted to test out the link to see what happens for this interview before we started recording. Well, this link goes to a studio, and this is the studio where I record all of my podcasts. And he pops on, and the first thing I swear he hears is two grown men talking about scheduling sex. Okay. And I host another podcast with another guy. He's a counselor. He's a marriage counselor. He's just like a crisis counselor. And it's called Man Therapy. And so this podcast that we talk about on this podcast, we talk about all thing men issues, men's mental health. We talk about, you know, like sports, kids in sports. And one of the topics that happens in men is when you've been married for X number of years and you have had your kids and you got a busy schedule and your wife is maybe in her 40s and she's going through the perimenopause phase. One thing that counselors talk about is potentially scheduling sex with your partner. And you popped in at that exact moment. And I'm like, I wonder what this guy thinks.
You know, Dan, if there's anybody else, I would have been kind of concerned, but it's just you. So I just kind of exited out.
So it's like I'm weird enough already where it just is par for the course of all the other shit that I do. Yeah.
It's just normal.
I love it. So I am now this is the crazy thing. Now we have to somehow pivot really hard to talk about hunting gear and equipment, but I believe we can do it.
We can do it.
All right. Before we do get into today's topic of conversation, I do have to say thank you to partners of the Hunting Gear Podcast. The first one is Reveal Trail Cameras. I don't know about you, David, but I run a handful of cameras. I rely on the cameras to help tell me the story of what's going on in the timber. For example, right now, man, I got this one trail camera and right about noon lately, between noon and 2 o'clock, there's been a lot of movement on this trail camera, which is weird for this late season time frame that we're sitting in. So I think this upcoming week I'm going to get out there and I'm going to go see what I can do on this second season shotgun here in Iowa. But if you want a badass trail camera, man, go check out the new Ultra from Reveal, and you can go look at all the functionality. You can go check out all the new features of it. You can check out the features through the app as well, the new app and some of the mapping and predictive deer movement stuff that they have on the Reveal app. And you can do all of that by going to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the new Ultra. Next on the list is the Muddy DV8 series. And the DV8 series is a line of clothing. They have base layers. They have insulation layers. They have some shell layers, and it's not designed for 100% cold, extremely cold temperatures. But this lineup, if you live in the South, seems to be a no-brainer. It's going to cover you for a lot of the southern type climates. If you are in that early to mid season, you know, all the way through early November, it's going to get you there as well. So the best thing to do is to go check out muddy.com and click on the footwear and apparel. And you're going to be able to go check out the entire lineup of apparel and gear, hunting camo from Muddy. So there's that. All right. First off, I want you to tell me how many bucks you've shot this year.
I shot five and 25.
Five deer. Holy shit.
Yep.
And in what states?
Michigan, two in Michigan, one in Illinois, one in Indiana, one in Ohio.
Okay. That's an accomplishment, right?
Thank you.
And would you say that these deer are in that above average category for the states that they were in? All things considered, no.
No, they're all three and a half and older. They were all public land, though.
All of them were public land.
All of them were public land. DIY walk-in, never been to any of these spots before. I literally walked in, scouted my way in, set up, hunted, and God blessed me. It's all there is to it.
Yeah. So, on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, we're going to talk on another time. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But today I want to talk about the gear you used in this $5 season that you've had so far. okay, and why you're using it. To get, because I mean, it sounds like you have things pretty honed. Yeah, luck plays a little bit of part in it, but there's a skill set, but also the gear that you're using plays a role as well. So let's talk about the gear you're using, man.
Sure. I will start with probably the most important first is my my main run and gun setup, which is a Lone Wolf 0.75 tree stand.
Okay. And that's the Lone Wolf custom gear, correct?
Lone Wolf custom gear, yep.
Okay. Yep. All right.
And I have the tethered one sticks with those. I was running their 17-inch double steps. But as far as the stand and the sticks go, they fit together great. They're nice. Yeah. I hunt pretty low to the ground. I don't know why. I mean, it's just I hunt the cover. But yep. Most of the time, for whatever reason, the cover I'm in, that's where the deer are or whatever, I'm 4 to 8 feet off the ground. And that really? Usually means small trees. And the way their sticks are designed with the Allen bolts that come out of those, a lot of times they were too wide for the trees I was getting in. I couldn't get them on the tree.
So the one you were using the one stick.
No, you had using the Lone Wolf custom doubles.
Oh, okay. You were using the Lone Wolf. Yep. But the bracket on the back was too wide.
Yeah, they use these, you know, like hardened steel grade 8 hardware bolts that come out and they grip the tree. They're awesome, you know, but it just the trees I was running into spots going in blind so often.
Yeah.
I just, you know, when you got the tree, it's just the tree. And I was running into spots where they wouldn't work for the tree I was in. So I ended up going to the tethered one sticks. The packability of those one sticks, I got the G3D printing quick clamps. They're like little horseshoes that go on them. So they snap together instead of using I'm not a fan of the tethered little prongs that go in that come with them from the factory. Those things, they break. They didn't have good luck with those. Okay. So I stealth stripped them, put the G3D clamps on there, and the way they store from tethered, they use that micro Amsteel cord, and they just wrap up and around, and then they got an elastic strip that goes right. I mean, they're so fast and so quiet, and it just, man, I usually only need two of them anyway. I do run an 8er on one of them just in case.
Yeah.
But I do have a Method 2 saddle with a Predator platform as well. But I ran into a lot of, I don't know if it's just, you know, how I hunt or the luck I had, or just, you know, when you go in blind, you're not too for sure on kind of what the deer, you can't have idea. The deer always were on my weak side, and you have that bridge, and with a bow, you know, so I've went to pretty much archery only in a stand.
Yeah.
Because I can just spin around or shift and I hunt on the backside of the trees most of the time, not all the time. There's no absolutes in this game at all, period. Right. I just do what works for me. All these companies make, honestly, top-of-line products. They're hunters for hunters, built by hunters. And I really actually kind of prefer the saddle for gun hunting, because then you have that tree in the bridge and you got a pretty good rest either way. You're just switching, you know, you can ambidextrous a gun. You can't do that with a bow.
Yeah.
As easy, you know.
So one thing that I, on the one sticks, I thought those were really good. My issue with them, and maybe you have a little tip or a trick for me.
Yep.
I had trouble getting them apart. The little orange little pegs that stick down into the holes, right?
I got rid of them.
Oh, so you took all those off.
That's the G3D printing. They have an aftermarket. It's like a clip. It's a horseshoe that snaps around the tube instead of goes down in, Dan.
Okay.
That's what I was saying. Those things are horrible. I couldn't, I mean, them.
So how hard was it to take them off? You just have an Allen wrench and you take it out?
So those you just popped out. You just take a little punch and you pop those right out. And then okay. you get the G3D, and that comes with screws and a 3D printed bracket that you put underneath and you just screw down. And then they literally just snap together.
Okay.
And they don't make any noise.
How much does a pair or a set of those cost?
Oh, that I'm not sure. You got to go to G3D Outdoors online.
I'd have to check that out because I used them a couple times, but I was in the woods just like, I mean, trying to yank these bastards apart. Dude, and it wasn't working. And so I used them one time and then, or one or two times. And then I liked once they were out on the tree, I liked them, but stacking them up became a hassle. And, I should probably go check out those little things.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Just the main thing on them was the packability, how they fit together. And then the Amsteel, how it winds right up. I mean, man, they're thought out really well.
Yeah. And so you're running two sticks with an aider on small trees. You're hunting fairly low to the ground. You're using the 7.5 hang on from Lone Wolf Custom Gear. So I'm looking at that right now online and I'm seeing $649.99 online for that stand. Talk to me about the price point, and did that bother you at all?
No.
Okay.
No, it didn't. It is made in USA. Mm-hmm. They have, I mean, they're the OGs. They have more time in the field and more people in the field than anybody else. They're good people. I like supporting good people. And I've fucked up so many times in my life trying to save money. And like, okay, I'm just going to spend this $200 here instead of the $600. And I end up spending the $200, then the $600 a month later because the $200 is squeaking and clanking and breaking or whatever. You know, like buy once, cry once. That stand will last me the rest of my life and then it can be passed down to my kid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that simple.
Yeah. That's definitely one way to look at it. I think I'm under the same impression too, where, I mean, I have a ton of the original Lone Wolves that I've still used. I mean, I might even have the one hanging on downstairs on my wall that I got from a garage sale years ago. I used it this year, then I took it down and it's in my garage or it's in a tree somewhere. I can't remember where it's at, but, it's one of those. And I've stealth stripped that, especially the metal parts, not the steps, but I've been using the Lone Wolf Assault and four sticks for my running gun forever. Yeah. Right. And the only thing now, as I get older, that I would start, it's not a criticism, it's just a me getting older thing, is on some of the trees I get into, they're a little off, right? This, and then they have the smaller ones, but the new Lone Wolf and like the XOPs that are the same, what's the other brand that basically Novex. Novex. Yes. Some of their stick steps are wider now and they have the hook on the end that prevents your boot from sliding off. Right.
Correct.
And so but I hunted this year with a bum knee. And so the one sticks are double stepped. Right. And that would have been a lot easier for me to get up into a tree as opposed to on something that's double stepped. As opposed to trying to almost pull myself up on the stick with a bad knee. And that sucked when I had to do that.
Less than ideal. Not really safe either.
No, not safe at all. Okay. So have you tried in the past, like what led you to that specific setup? Was there any other sticks or saddles or stands that you used in the past that you're like, okay, it's okay, but I want to upgrade.
Yeah, I don't think we could get through this entire podcast with that, Dan. Talk yeah. about, you know, spending, you know, money on stuff that is, I mean, but it's all a learning. Like, you got to find what works for you. What works for me yeah. might not work for you. The same right. product. I mean, it just, everybody's built different. The way they climb, their strategy, whatever. It just, yeah. I built what works for me.
Yeah.
yeah. You know, there's a lot of trial and error. There's, I just, like I said, I can't reiterate enough. Just buy once, cry once. Yeah. you're going to end up spending the money no matter what. And then what's the value of your life worth? Is that $600 really that much money if you're looking at the construction and safety and how it's been designed to, you know? So yeah. it really grips. There's a lot of times where I go to pull the strap off. My stand's still stuck to the tree, Dan. Like, I have to
yeah.
pull it off the tree.
Yeah. That's a good sign. Yeah. That's yeah. a good sign. So, but your method of hunting is heavy into the run and gun, right? The yeah, hang and yeah. hunt, you're tearing down every hunt. So how many tree stands do you actually have? Is it just the one and then the set of sticks, and that's what you use every single hunt you go in?
Yeah. So I have the 0.75. Mm-hmm. I have a set of the Lone Wolf Custom Gear 17 inch doubles. I have a set of the tethered one sticks, and then I have a tethered platform with a Latitude Method 2 saddle.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm all knock on door permission, public land. You know, I don't have a pre-hung anywhere, and the deer patterns change every year. I mean, hunt to hunt. I mean, I do so many micro adjustments within my sits. I don't get married to a spot. That's probably me and Joe, the boogeyman, were talking about this last night. He was asking me, because he hunted with me some this year, and he's like, dude, just like, how are you doing it? Like, we show up to a place and you're tagged out after the first morning, and I was like, I don't know what I'm not doing really anything different than anybody else, I don't think. And we're kind of trying to dive into that, and we still haven't really come up with, other than that sixth sense that we talked about in the last podcast. I just, when you get in there, you can feel it. And I don't know. And I'm looking for certain trees. I'm hunting the cover, and I'm kind of thinking about things somewhat different in the moment and in the spot than what most people do. Like, some people just want to, my Ohio hunt there. I had a spot picked out. It was way back in. It was snowing that morning and everything. And most people, when you have a spot picked and you got that, you want to get there before daylight, right? Like, you're just going to turn and burn. You're going to kind of just get in there. And I was like, man, with this snow coming down, I got the cover is quiet. I'm going to let it get daylight, and I'm going to slip in the gray light, because I've never been there before. I just felt like my odds were going to be better. So I just held up on this transition line under the, there wasn't a power line there, but it must've been like underground oil line or something. And there's like a bunch of goldenrod, and it was on the way to where I was going to sit. And I just held up there and let it get light. And this buck was coming right to me, right down the edge of that transition line, right at first light. I would have walked right by this deer.
Yeah. Yeah. And so a little bit of the strategy matched with the gear that allowed you to implement your strategy, which yeah. seems to be heavily mobile style of deer hunting.
Yeah. And I am, when I say minimalist, I mean minimalist. Like, sometimes I'm like, how can I not take a bow in with me? Like, I just feel like it's too long. Like, I'm just like, yeah. what can I cut here? Like, I mean, I'm bare bones when I'm out there to hunt. I'm out there to hunt, Dan. I don't need snacks. I don't need a phone charger. I don't need to be like, I literally am taking my stand, sticks, my bow, my release, rangefinder. That's it. Grunt call sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't need anything distracting me, or I'm not going for a 3 day sit 24 hours straight in a stand. And even then, like, my all day sits, I take a bottle of water. Yeah, it kind of sucks, but I'm there to hunt. I'm on point. I don't really let myself get distracted. I try to stay in the game the whole time. And that's tough, being focused that long and all, but it really pays.
It, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm there for that one opportunity. I don't want to miss it.
Were you always a minimalistic hunter, or did you go through a season a part of your life where you're like, dude, I gotta have all of it?
I would say my teen years, probably. You know, you sit and you watch Lee and Tiffany and all these other guys, you know, and they got half of their house in their stand.
Yeah.
You know, I used to have the cookies. I used to have the drink, or, you know, the rattling antlers, the grunt call, the whole gambit. You know, I would say probably my teen years. And that was also when I had pre-hungs. I was hunting the same stand over and over, wondering why I wasn't seeing any deer, or they would be just out of range skirting me every time, coincidentally, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so what led you to be a minimalistic hunter? Like, was there a moment where you're just like, dude, I just have too much shit on me? Did it cost you a deer, or did you start following a certain influencer or podcast or something like that that got you to go, I need to just drop 90% of this stuff?
I don't think there's one specific instance I can lead to in that. I think it's just part of the journey. Mm-hmm. And that's a good question, Dan. You're doing good today. Those are some tough ones. it's the stuff you don't ever think about, really, you know?
Yeah.
Self-reflecting stuff or whatever.
Because I know, dude, I'll be honest. I know I could drop a ton of gear, right? Like, I take an Ozonix in the tree with me, right? You know how, even though it's lighter than what they used to be, dude, I love having an ozone option in the tree with me. My confidence is at an all-time high when that thing is in the tree. Is it necessary? No, it's not. Is it expensive? Yes, it is. But it gives me a little peace of mind. And I carry a bottle of water with me. I don't eat in the stand anymore either, like I used to. I always carry a couple extra hooks. If I'm doing a run and gun like I did this year, I'm always wearing a saddle. So I'm hybrid. I'm wearing a saddle in the tree stand.
Yep.
Right. And that's a majority of my hunts. I like having the pockets on the side and the ability to kind of lean back, on a lot of that. Other than that, you know, I have a couple extra screw-in steps. That's about it. But it's still not as minimal as what you have. I know that if I ever do go on like next year, I'm thinking about focusing more on whitetails throughout the Midwest as far as the rut is concerned, and getting into some spots where it's going to be like a potential two sticks and a tree stand type of or a saddle and a platform type of an environment. And then I go, but I'm always thinking about what's the terrain, what time of year is it?
That's
right. If it's in November, I'm getting higher because there's less vegetation. If it's mid season, I'm hitting lower because the leaves are still on the tree. So I don't need that third or potential fourth, you know, that fourth or third stick, when I'm doing a run and gun, that kind of stuff. I used to bring a handsaw with me, I can remember some of these hunts that I was going on, where I was 100% mobile every set. I had the four Lone Wolf sticks. I had the assault stand. I had the Wicked Tree Gear collapsible pole saw. I had my Ozonix. I had extra layers of clothing, and it was just like 50 pounds of shit on my back. Right. So I used to be able to put up four sticks and a stand in like a matter of minutes, like just boop, like second thought, like just not, it's just reaction, not even thinking about it.
You feel bulletproof, don't you?
Oh yeah. Once you get up there.
You're in it.
And then the other thing that I used to be really like, oh God, you had to be quiet. You had to be just like dead quiet. But then I also, dude, there's been times, and this happened in Kansas, where I was making a shit ton of noise. setting up, getting in. I dropped something out of my tree, made a loud echoing noise. And then I went back down, had to climb back up the tree, set. And then 10 minutes later, a buck came by and I shot it. So it's like, I don't, like, for me personally, I don't stealth strip or tape up my sticks or my stands for the quietness. For me, it's more about like the feel that some of these sticks have, where it's cold, like it's cold. It doesn't feel as cold when you're you're sitting there doing it at like 25 degrees or 30 degrees. Well, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So, all right.
That hunt in Kansas was probably a rut hunt, though, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So you know, everything's situational. Like early season, I would probably disagree with most of that. You got to be on the next level. But when it comes to the rut,
you're right.
Dude, I've ran through the woods blowing a grunt call through the middle of deer like a insane person to get to my stand. And then next thing you know, here they come single file.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's a good point.
It's all situational time of year.
I mean, I've been like, I also hunt in a lot of active farm ground where there's tractors and 100%. Like, I can remember I hunted next to a pig farm one year. And if you know anything about pigs, they have these feeders where the pigs will use their nose and they'll lift up a door and then they'll feed and then they'll drop. So the entire day, it's just like clank, 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 clank. And they must get used to it. I mean, I could see the feeder from where I was at, and sure enough, deer were coming by. So is what it is there.
That's cool.
How do you make the decision on what bow you're going to buy?
Feel 100%.
Yeah.
For whatever reason it is, I'm pretty much married to Matthews now. They just fit me. I actually won the Hoyt at the Lone Wolf Mobile Hunter Roadshow for the 100-yard shot 2 years ago. And I decked that thing out, had it all set up, and I just could not shoot the dang thing. It just didn't fit right in my hand. I tried grips. I did everything. And I was just like, I'm going back to my V3X. And I actually just sold that, and I just ordered the Arc.
Yeah. So
that fit the way my shoulders are shaped or whatever, the draw side, it just, the grip, the way the bow, they fit me better. I think anybody should go put a blindfold on and shoot 8 bows, then down to 4, then down to 2, and then go from there. You know, I mean, you want to go by feel, and you want that weapon to be an extension of your body.
Yeah.
You want what feels the most natural. Like my buddy, I can shoot my Glock, no problem. Just right out, not even aiming, like pointing a finger, and that thing's going to hit. I pick up a SIG, and I'm 6 inches left and 3 inches high. You know, it just doesn't fit my hand, but he can't shoot my Glock, and he can shoot the SIG. I mean, it's just, there's nothing wrong with either, and you just got to find what works for you, man.
Yeah. So you say you're kind of married. Does that make you brand loyal? Do you still go out and try to shoot different brands of bows every time you're looking for a new bow?
Yep. It just seems like I know now, though, if that makes sense. Like I'll still do it. And I still did just here recently before. I'm a lefty too, so that kind of narrows some things down. Like I wanted to really try the Prime, but they're not even going to make it in a left hand. They're not even going to offer it in a left hand. So they're aluminum bow. Yeah. Yep. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to order this Arc. They won't even start making the left hands until March of next year. Okay. So okay. I'm out on that for a while.
Yep.
But I have a feeling it's going to be a good match.
Yeah. And that's the same thing where for a while I can remember going through and back in the day when I was heavily going to the trade shows and hitting the ATA every year, I had the ability to go in and shoot a majority of all the bow brands at that one place. Now, you know, some of these shows, not all the bow manufacturers are going to the ATA show anymore. So that played a role. And so I would go to like a local archery shop, and they had the PSE, the Matthews, the Bowtech, and then some of the like other brands. I don't think they had Hoyt. I don't think they were a Hoyt dealership. But what I'm getting at is I kept, and there's a lot of them that were good, but I kept gravitating towards the Bowtech side of things. There was a lot of them that felt really good. Like I was surprised a couple years ago by the advancements that PSE has made in the game. And they started making some really good bows.
Their new carbon bow is pretty sweet, man.
Yeah. I'm not a carbon guy for some reason. I just have it in my head. I don't like carbon, but I used to not like the Matthews draw cycles either. And now they've done something, or my body's changed or whatever, to where that felt better. I didn't shoot last year's bow, but the bow before that felt better in my, one of those. Yeah. It felt way better than what it was. And so,
well, now they have the new Z mod too for the Arc coming out. So they have different mods. You can change the whole feel of your bow just by mods. So I like the versatility of that too. That they're offering.
And that's becoming industry standard, where you don't need a bow press. You don't need all that stuff to make changes to your bows to really customize it. I think the one thing that I personally am going to be heavily looking into between now and next year is grip styles. I feel like I need a fatter grip on my bow than what I currently have for some reason. Okay. Like right now, I wrap electrical tape around it a handful of times. It doesn't do anything really. I like the feel of the hockey tape on there, the grip of that tape. But I feel like I need a wider grip. And so
square grip. Matthews makes that square grip. That's another thing. You know, it's all about personal fitment and everything. Matthews, you can buy the set of grips that you can put on the bow. You can do just the side plates. You can do the back. They got a square back. They got a rounded back. And there's another one.
A whole bunch of different accessories.
Yeah. And you can fit it, you know, to you. And then they got the Chris B grip too, you know.
Yeah.
You just got to find what fits you. You can't go wrong with any of the new bow. Like, think of the technology that's out there, Dan, nowadays. Like, we're so spoiled, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I gave away in 2006, I believe it was, I bought a Bowtech Tribute. I wish I didn't give it away. And I wish that I kept it so I could go back and shoot it to see what it feels like compared to what's on the market now. You know what I mean? I also have one of my favorite bows I ever shot was a Prime Logic. And, and that's, I think one of the last years they made the double cams on the primes on the tops and bottoms
to get rid of the cam.
It had it had limb stops on it. And dude, I felt at home at full draw at that bow. And now really what I'm doing is it's just sitting there basically waiting for me to give it to one of my kids, whenever they get older, old enough to draw it back. But if they ever do, so.
Yeah, I had the V3X for 5 years. There wasn't anything that really came out that I was like, man, this deserves an upgrade or this need, you know. And this year, man, they really hit it out of the park for me personally with a lot of the micro tuning available and everything. Speaking of Bowtech, do you remember the Bowtech Obsessions? Like, they're an older bow. I mean, 2000. Anyway, those bows are actually kind of making a comeback.
Yeah.
There's
how do you mean?
Trying to buy those. It's weird. It's like bows have this like second life to them. Like you got the new stuff coming in and you're like, okay, this is sweet. And then there's like this like 5 to 6, 7 year period where that bow just kind of dies. It's not worth nothing. Mm-hmm. And then you still got the new technology, but then all of a sudden people want that was a good bow. They realized how good of a bow that was, even right. compared to the new feet per second wear. And they start buying them off of eBay and everything. That's kind of what's happening with those obsessions. Those were a fast bow.
Yeah. I think a lot of what happens too is when you get into there's a group of people out there who take it real serious. And then there's a group of I've had this, I don't want to call it awakening, but it's like, why does a person need a new bow every year or every other year? Right. And so they buy a new bow and then they realize like on paper, all of this stuff is the same, right? The draw length, the draw weight, all that stuff is the same. Yeah. There's definitely some technology updates, but does the average Joe need all of that? And the answer is probably no. And so they're like, well, I got rid of this bow. I liked shooting it and I'm going to spend 70% less on this used bow. All I have to do is take it to a bow shop, get new strings on it, make sure there's no cracks in the limbs, and I'm back to shooting a really good quality bow.
Yeah. Yep. Most certainly. I honestly think it's a confidence thing. I think it kind of gives people confidence. Like, I got the best equipment. Let's get out there. You know, I think it's that. There might be a small percentage of some that are ego there.
Yeah.
And then there's probably a.
What's your arrow build look like?
Oh, man. Dan, you really want to piss some people off today, don't you?
Well, I don't know. I'm not trying to piss anybody off.
I know. No. All right. So here we go. This is going to be your one that you record and throw out there.
Okay.
I shoot a full total hunting weight arrow of 348 grains.
Okay. Lighter?
29 inches.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm shooting 70 pounds. I shoot the Mega Meats.
Okay.
And I run feathers on the back that really helps steer that lighter arrow. And this is the reason why. Guys, we're hunting goats. All there is to it. We're hunting goats. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you have a 800 grain arrow. If you shoot that deer in the shoulder, you're not blowing through. You're still wounding that deer. So what I have went to do, ask me how I know. This is how, talk about a long journey. Full cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, I did the whole ranch fairy stuff and did all that. And then I was shooting over deer, shooting under deer, and all that, because the pin gap you have with that tank of an arrow is insane. Then you're in a rut hunt and you have a buck at 10 yards and all of a sudden he bumps that doe out to 35 and you don't have time to range him. Near's your shot opportunity. And you're sitting there with pins this far apart because you're shooting a log. It wasn't working for me. So I went to this think logically here. Like, let's just think logically here. Ran the numbers, was still up there around mid 80s for kinetic energy. And I was with my V3X, 29 inch draw, 70 pounds, 319 feet per second. Mm-hmm. I could be 3 inches high at 10 yards. Well, this is with one pin. And I was 6 inches low at 40 yards with one pin. Figure that out, Dan. Like,
yeah,
one pin. You put that on that deer, your arrow's going home. And
yeah,
people get off of the shoulder. Like, when you're young, raising up, and this is how my dad taught me. He says, follow the front leg up. I don't know if you was taught that, Dan, but follow the front leg up, follow the front leg up. And it was so hard for me to break that. I actually now go up the rear leg of the deer. That's part of my shot process. I go up the rear leg of the deer and I come over.
Yeah.
Because it gets me off.
I go up the front leg and then over 4 inches. I'm shooting off shoulder big time. I'm trying to hit mid to back long.
100%.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm that back rack of ribs, man.
Yeah. And I think that's great. However, I feel that there's a time and place for a heavier arrow, but we have to remember even 10 years ago, 350 grains, total arrow weight was pretty big. compared to, like, I can remember measuring somewhere around high 270s, high 200s for a total arrow weight, which was probably way too, back in the day when everybody was talking about speed, right? My arrow goes this fast, whatever. Okay. I get it. Here's what I want to say is I see a lot of videos online of people shooting deer. And I want to get your take on this, of people shooting deer and the arrow is not going in as far as it needs to. And even in my opinion, if you're at 20, 30 yards, right? Let me ask you this question. With your setup, is your arrow going through the deer at 30 yards and in?
Oh, Dan, go to my YouTube page. I have a doe that I intentionally shot quartering to for this, you know, research and development purposes. That arrow went right here through that entire deer out in front of the back leg and stuck in the ground 8 inches at 12 yards. At that 160 I shot in Illinois public, that was like 10 yards. I mean, blew right through. This is all on video. I have not had a time where the arrow did not pass through the deer with this setup. But I'm staying off of the shoulder.
Yeah.
I mean, what is more, you know, people talk about ethics. You know, what's more ethical? Having a heavy arrow trying to hug that shoulder and having a very low percentage shot, wounding that deer, having it stay out there in the woods, wounded, you know, shoulder, high back? Or is it more lethal to aim back a little bit and maybe if you clip one long liver, you got to wait 10 hours before you go track it? You know, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a heavy arrow and I shoot off the shoulder. And that's just for personal reasons, like what we all have. Yep. But I want to talk about some of these arrow builds that I'm seeing. Dude, I'm seeing people hit a deer and they're getting one lung, but I feel like with today's technology and the bows that people are shooting, you should be passing through deer at 20 yards. Even if you hit a rib head on, right?
Prime example, Tiffany Lukoski. Her arrows are blowing through deer with mechanicals. You know, it's all about setup. She can't be shooting more than 50 pounds.
What are some of the reasons you think why people's arrows are not going through deer?
It just comes down to setup. It just has to be. I don't know. We're getting out of my knowledge range here, so I don't want to talk out of place. I don't think they're spending enough time running numbers, you know, with their weight, their setup, their arrow length, their shaft size, grains per inch. It's all right there. You just got to know. You got to go to your pro shops. Like, lean on, but there's not the best ones out there too. I mean, you're going to get upsold. Luckily, I have my buddy Tom, Irwin Archery Mechanics here. He used to work at Shoepex. Super good guy. I actually went to him with this arrow build and was talking to him, and he kind of was like, man, Dave, that's really out of the normal. But then, you know, like I said, we ran the numbers and he's like, holy crap, you might be onto something. So we built it and now he's built the setup doing the same thing. I mean, speed kills, you know, you got to have that balance. Everything's about balance.
And you said yours is, your total arrow weight is 270 or 370, you said? Total arrow weight?
So it's 348.
Okay, 348.
347, 348, 349, right in there.
Okay, all right, yeah. Yeah, I
with the Megabit.
I don't know why. I'm blessed with a 30-inch draw, 70 pounds. And so I shoot a crowbar, pretty much. You know, it's not 600 or higher, but I also set my arrows up for just in case type moments. Like just in case I do have a marginal shot, I want to smoke a shoulder. And I've had times where I've hit that shoulder with a heavy arrow and it's zipped through because of that. I've also had I go out west. That means I need a longer shot. That means I need kinetic energy on my side, you know, as the arrow loses speed traveling through the air. And then just in case I ever want to go on an elk hunt, which I would have to change broadheads and go to a
I would have to do the same thing too at that point.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm always thinking I'm going to go on an elk hunt. I never go on an elk hunt. And so I have an arrow build for an elk hunt or like a bigger mule deer, but it's awesome when it also zips through a whitetail.
So,
like
so
a hot
what's,
knife.
Yeah. What's cool with my setup is I still run a 5-pin, but mm-hmm. I know my top pin with my setup is good from 10 yards to 40 yards. But yeah. I do run two extra arrows that are my old, like 490 grain setups, roughly right mm-hmm. in there, just under 500. And I left my pins there. I've never used it since I've done this. I haven't used it. But they are there for whatever reason. Like if I was in a very high wind situation, my arrow mm-hmm. setup is not going to fare very well. I'm going to want to grab my heavier arrow. But like I said, I don't have to recight my bow in. I just know that I have my dedicated pins for the heavier arrow because of the pin gap. But I like running one pin out to 40. I mean, it takes yeah. me out of the equation. This is all about odds, you know, and whenever you can change yeah. 5% efficiency across the board, well, you do three things at 5%, you just got 15% better at what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Yeah. I like that idea.
I said that right.
I like that idea of basically using your 20 yard pin, like using a one, like, cause I have a 5-pin sight and I gap shoot. I gap shoot sometimes if I need to, I range something at 25, I'll put yep. the 20 on top and the 30 at his belly or whatever.
Yep.
And, you know, and gap shoot. But I like the idea of having your 20 yard pin. And if you know it's not 40 and you know it's not 20, it's somewhere in there, you can still put your 20-yard pin on it exactly. and smoke it.
It know? Happens fast out there, man. I'm just being yeah. real, you know? I mean, yeah. I've been out there so much. Like, I'm trying to put every odd in my favor to capitalize mm-hmm. on the one moment I was blessed to have.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. you know, you might only get one of those a season.
Yeah. Here's the other thing that I didn't like about a heavier arrow, or I didn't like about lighter weight arrows, I had kind of the opposite where I felt my pins were too close together in certain scenarios. And so when there was a time where I felt like there was potentially some shooting light left, and I would draw back at a deer coming in a low light scenario, and I almost had pin blindness. Does that make sense? Where
yeah.
I couldn't necessarily see, and that's probably maybe not the arrow's fault, but the fiber optic and how much light it's putting out. I probably needed a smaller, like a, what's that?
You really only needed one pin in that situation then, Dan. If you think, if yeah. your pins are that tight, you might do a 26 yard zero and that puts you X high at 10 yeah. and X low at 40. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
My arrow's heavy enough. Prince, my pins are wide enough. I don't get that, you know, with the two yeah. setups.
And there's, you know, there's pluses and minuses to everything. So then that sure. caused me to go to a one pin sight for a lot of years. And then the one pin sight was great. Until I had a very quick, like bouncing back and forth type scenario where he was at 10, then he was at 40, then he was at 30. And I was sitting there trying to do that all the time.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know.
That exact scenario happened to me way more times than I even want to remember. I mean, 100%. I mean, that is just, it's so frustrating and depressing, you know, when that happens. Yeah. And that's what I was trying to eliminate by doing that. And it goes yeah. back to the last podcast we did. Hunt your hunt. Do what works for you. You know, just stay in your lane. You know, do your research. Try some things. Don't be afraid to try a couple of things. You might be surprised what works and what doesn't work that people said worked or didn't yeah. work. Vice versa,
yeah.
you know?
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers. For a rich, delicious experience, whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
What other parts of gear outside of the bow and the arrow and the sticks and the stand and the saddle kind of play a role in your mobile setup?
So more recently, Osseo.
Okay.
Dude, that the fit and finish of that product. I was a Sitka guy before, and I still am. Nothing wrong with them. They don't have pockets where they need to have pockets most of the time. I don't know if you've experienced that or not. Like some of the early season Sitka stuff, their pants didn't even have pockets. I'm like, come on, guys, you know? And Joe was just next level. He's a good guy. He's a good Christian. I like I said, I like supporting good people.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. And he's out in the field doing, I mean, just the attention to detail, you know, and this is a rare thing that you don't normally get these days is you get quality for a good price. Like I think his price to quality is next to none there. I mean, for what you are getting, like he should be 15, 20% more in his pricing, honestly. He could easily get away with it, you know. It's camo for hunters. It has changed so much there in the woods that I feel like it's quieter. Everything, like I don't even have to think of where my rangefinder's at or the pot. Like it all just feels right. It feels, once again, you know, an extension of your person's. That's how I feel in that camo. It's just a extension of my body. Like it just. It bends in the right spots. It's quiet. It's man.
And so you're saying that when you decided to lean that way and start buying the Osseo gear over the Sitka gear,
that was a tough transition.
It was more of a functioning thing as far
100%.
As 100%. Yeah.
I mean, I already had almost $2,000 in Sitka gear. You know, I had the whitetail set. I had everything, you know. And then Joe came out with that, and I talked to him at the, what was that, Mobile Hunter Expo that came here. And then, obviously, I talked to him out at Andre's place when I was out there. And then they came to a couple of the road shows that I hosted here in Michigan with some of their gear. So, after getting to talk to him and actually just try it, like when I first put that jacket on and the pockets were right there and everything, and it bent, like, you know, I'm wider guys, bigger shoulders, and it kind of flexed with me. It didn't feel constricting at all. The cuffs were nice and tight around the arms. So you release, you know, nothing was, man, I just was like, this is a no brainer. Like this is far superior functionality compared to what I have currently.
Yeah.
And
so attention to detail was really for like a hardcore bow hunter.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mobile hardcore hunter. Yes.
Yeah. And there's a lot of companies out there that do this similar thing. I know like Code of Silence is one. They have their own special take on the camo and things like that. Osseo gear. I'm trying to think of, there's a couple other ones. That First Light is, I guess you could put First Light into that, but they're kind of they're bigger. And I feel like some of these brands are like this mom and pop style.
Oh, I see what you're saying there.
You know what I mean? Like,
got it.
They're a smaller brand, but they still have a big value to them.
I see what you're going up for. Yeah.
And so there's a couple other ones, you know, Predator Camo. Might even fall
I was just gonna say,
into that.
The OG,
I love I love Predator camo from back in the day, man. And so that's probably one of my favorite camo brands throughout all of the years. And it was funny, a lot of that stemmed from looking at a magazine advertisement and looking at the magazine advertisement and going, well, that camera angle is from eye level, not from a deer's level looking up into the tree in a October or November day and how it looks. And I'm just like, if you look up at a predator, at predator camera, it literally looks like it could be part of the tree, and the white spots and gray spots are where they should be to make it look like a stick a twig and a stick and things like that. Yeah. And the contrast there, I really liked Predator camo.
Oh yeah. The key to all this though is just staying the fuck still, dude. Like just be part, you know, when people say, you know, blend into the woods, I think it's just breathe, match the vibe. You know, you can, I wouldn't wear blue jeans, you know, just because of the UV. I think UV and the material is more important than the pattern. The type of material used is more important than the pattern.
100%.
I
don't know if you've heard like Dakota Silence guys, and that they, and their camp or their material is non-reflective of the sunlight. And so that's
killer.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. Killer. But the material plays a huge role, but some of the stuff, especially the first line of Sitka, I couldn't wear Sitka's pants into the woods because I would walk out with every thorn, cockabur, beggar's lice, all that stuff stuck to it to the point where I was sick of cleaning it off. So a lot of the fleece stuff I don't wear, especially for the bottoms. I'm wearing like even denim and Carhartt type material pants with a hunting type base layer underneath of it. It's just not durable enough.
Yeah, that late season, what was that called? Their late season. It had a name.
Inferno series or something like that.
Yeah, dude, them things. I wore it out into the woods. I mean, I was like, I literally just dropped $800 in burrs. Like it was like
a burr magnet.
It was so many burrs. Like I couldn't even bend my legs. It was It was so bad. Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't just Sitka. It was a variety of brands when fleece became huge, and then. Dude, I just like this year. I wore the pants I'm wearing right now on my mule deer hunt. I bought them at Farm and Fleet, or Tyson's. Excuse me, I bought them at Tyson's, and then I wear a base layer underneath of them. If it was cold, I would wear something a little different than this, but they weren't the major big heavy fleece stuff. I just can't do that, man. I got sick of pulling shit off. Now, once I get to the tree, I'll put on like a fleece or a heavy coat for something like that. So buddy.
I'm so fat that I pretty much go out in just a t-shirt. And then I got the Lone Wolf half pack that I do use towards the late season, but I don't really have anything in it. I'll put my grunt call in there, a bottle of water, and it's on the back of the stand, but on the bottom of it, it's got a flap that goes out so I can roll my jacket up and clip it in there and have it on my stand as I go up the tree. So that half pack is as much, if I take a pack with me, that is it. Yeah. And it's, you know, that's been.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
A huge assistance in my setup.
Yeah. I have a, I don't even know what the name of the pack is for, but I have the straps underneath. So like I do not like getting sweaty going to the tree stand. And
just freezing after.
Oh dude, it sucks. It sucks. So I have the rolled up, whatever it is. I mean, there's times where I'm going to my tree stand in my base layer and my base layer pants.
Yes.
And then when I get to the bottom of the tree, I'm getting dressed after I set up. I'm getting dressed and then climbing up and sitting down.
100%.
So yeah.
That's smart. Yeah, well, you have to. Otherwise, you'll end up freezing or you get sweaty and cold. Like, it's so counterproductive, you know?
Yep, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, David, man, this has been a great little BS session. A hunting gear BS session. We talked everything from tree stands and sticks to arrows and bows and camo and everything like that. Are you done hunting for the year?
Oh yeah. Yep. I went 5 and 20. Your show has stooped to a whole level of lowness. Like, you actually have a homeless guy on your podcast.
Oh, are you homeless right now?
I'm homeless. We sold our farm.
Okay. Well,
we are currently living in a van down by the river.
Well, I tell you what, there's something freeing about that. You can go wherever you want. You can go and do whatever you want.
It's game changer. We'll see what this journey involves, but yeah.
All right, dude. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with us about gear, man.
Sounds good. Thank you, Dan.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365 Copilot.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.